This is a HeadGum Original.
Andrew, answer the question, who is your B-boy?
I'm with 34-year-old Aaron on this. I'm a Kevin. Yeah. I'm a Kevin guy. I think, honestly, though, I think part of it is just the long coat from the video.
Sure.
When they're when they're inside the plane terminal, they're all in white. But when they're outside, he has that like really cool long coat and the goatee.
Matrix long.
And it's very Matrix. And he comes forward. He's kind of like has that serious moment in the song. And you're just like, oh man, the rest of the song was fun, but this shit just got real.
This is real. He's about to deliver a soothing baritone and then maybe expose himself.
He does.
50-50 with Kevin.
Let's punch it.
You know what? I'm so excited to talk about this legendary hit. We are already off to the races, but I want to tell the audience what we're going to do here. This is a show called Punch Up the Jam, in which we pretend to make songs better, but we actually ruin them. We talk about the hits of the day, and this week we're talking about one of the most anticipated songs. In terms of songs that fans clamor for, that were giant, world-breaking hits and take people back to their childhood, this is one of those songs. And this week we're talking about I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys, and we're joined by two guests that we've been looking forward to having on the show for some time, and I'm talking about Jack Douglas and his wife, Erin Breslin, who host a hilarious podcast called Erin is the Funny One, but also Jack's been working on his YouTube channel, which is how we met him, for approximately 1 billion years, and it's just a spectacular place to find comedy. It's called Jack's Films.
Yeah, and a great place for just the fan community of anyone who loves the Na'vi, anyone who's into the Na'vi, anyone who's really looking forward to Avatar 2.
Now, wait a minute.
If you are out there just dying to know what's going to happen next in the Chronicle of Jake Sully. Just go check out Jack's Films.
Jack and Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
So happy to be here. Thank you, guys. I got to ask you guys this. Have you ever seen the Backstreet Boys live in concert?
No. We could be missing out.
I turned the question back around on you, Jack, because that seemed a little loaded.
I'm so glad you did.
Have you all ever seen the Backstreet Boys live in concert?
We've seen them, five times, I think?
At least five, yeah.
Yeah, I think we've seen them five times. We were supposed to see them in 2020, and obviously that didn't happen, and then it was supposed to be 2021, and then that didn't happen. And so now I think it's rescheduled for June of 22. But we've seen them in Hawaii. We've seen them in Las Vegas twice. We've seen them in L.A. and
Irvine.
I'm losing my mind.
My jaw is on the floor. We did not know what we were dealing with.
Was the Hawaii trip organized specifically for the Backstreet concert?
Yes.
Yes, it was.
100%,
yes,
right? You were like, they're playing Honolulu. We're going.
I know.
When Jack and I first met and exchanged numbers and we were texting, I mean, within the first 5 minutes of conversation, we talked about our mutual love of the Backstreet Boys, and
it was an icebreaker.
I honestly don't think that we'd be here now if it weren't for the Backstreet Boys.
No, those
you
are good texts.
Didn't
too.
Want it that way.
Yeah.
In what, 10 how, years this December.
How do you even get to the Backstreet Boys that fast? That's what I desperately need to know.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Ah, shit. How did that happen?
It was really fast. I think, you know what
so,
I think it
you
was?
Like the Backstreet Boys?
So Jack was telling me that he was at a bar and that he had requested songs on one of those like
jukebox
things or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure you said you requested a bunch of Backstreet Boys.
It would be very
songs.
In character if I did. Yeah.
And I was like, who is this fellow? Like, what is that? You must know. Anyway, but
who hurt him?
So, yeah.
I beg your pardon.
We cannot dwell on this because we have to start playing clips of the song and talking about the actual music. Everyone knows and loves this song. Everyone knows every inch of it. And yet I'm stuck here. Like, how did you become super fans? And what, when you've seen them twice, what is it that gets you to pull the trigger on the third set of ticks?
They just put on a damn good show. And what they do, it's hardly a secret. It's not even like, it's just smart. They play all the hits. They know what their audience is there to hear. You know, like some bands will be like, you know, here's everything from our latest album and like one or two classics. And everyone's there to hear the one or two classics. Nah, not the Backstreet Boys. They're like, we know why you're here. Here's every major radio hit we've ever done.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot.
That's it. Which is a lot. And it just grows and grows. But they know exactly who to play for. Women and moms in their 30s. And they nail that demo. And there I am. I'm loving it too. Because like, damn, those boys had a lot of hits.
Can you guys pinpoint the first time you heard the song on the radio? Can you guys remember like when?
Yes.
Wait, you can?
I can.
Okay.
I absolutely can. I was in my bedroom. When did this come out? Like
1999.
Thank you. 99. Okay.
Yeah. So you'd be in sixth grade.
I was a little sixth grade boy in my bedroom back in Maryland. And the song came on the radio. And I remember like beforehand, the DJ was like, it's the world premiere. So I'm like, this is like one of the first times they ever played the dang thing. And so the DJ is like, world premiere, world premiere. And they play it. You hear that guitar.
The iconic.
Iconic mm-hmm. guitar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was like, I forget if I just straight up didn't know it was the Backstreet Boys or if I had already forgotten that the DJ was like, this is the new single from the Backstreet Boys. I remember thinking, this doesn't sound anything like the Backstreet Boys. To me, it was the equivalent of like Taylor Swift's Evermore. It's just so stripped down with the guitar. Mm. I was like, this isn't the poppy, pop and lock, you know, very mechanical, technical Backstreet Boys produce tracks that
What did you have in mind? The up-tempo stuff, the Backstreet's back, that
100%,
stuff?
100%. I wanted like, you know, 8-part harmonies and just like the most industry produced beats. And it just opens with this simple guitar and one dude singing. Where are the other four? What? And I think I was even thinking like, this doesn't even sound like any of the Backstreet Boys. You know, now I can pinpoint, you know, who sings what. But back then, my dumb little sixth grade brain is thinking like, what am I even listening to? It rocked my freaking world.
It's masterful.
They had also had this like bizarrely slow burn moment in the 90s because there'd kind of been like this dip in the mid 90s. I blame it on Milli Vanilli. You know, Milli Vanilli got in trouble. They weren't really singing their own songs.
Blame a lot
of them. It was just some models.
Including the rain.
That there was kind of like a dip in respect for boy bands. People did not have the ultimate respect we now have for boy bands. And Backstreet Boys, is hard to believe, could not get a record deal. They couldn't get one.
Because this is post
New Kids on the Block. Right. They even were dropped from a record deal. They were about to be signed to a record deal. And I swear to God, this is true. John fucking Cougar Mellencamp heard about it. He was on the label and was like, no, no.
What?
If you sign the Backstreet Boys, if you guys get into the boy band game, I'm out. I'm leaving. And like mid-90s America, people were like, we can't lose the John Cougar. We can't lose the Cougar. Little Big Houses.
So the Backstreet Boys couldn't catch a break?
They could not catch a break.
Oh my God.
I remember in the mid-90s, there was this weird like energy mm-hmm. where basically how they finally broke is they started going to Sweden and recording songs. And they had these huge hits in Europe and Asia and Australia before any of it had been released in America. Like their first album was never released in America. But somehow it like there was this weird osmosis into America just through the minds of teenage girls. Mm. And like this, a stray poster would start appearing, you know, like for a girl who perhaps went to a camp in Quebec, and she's like you have not heard of this band, but like you're gonna hear about them. The Backstreet Boys are good. They're better than anything you've heard. And you're like, yeah, whatever. Their second album didn't come out in the United States. And it's only like the first album that came out in the United States was just a compilation of those two European albums fucking crushed. So their first album in America was also amazing because you get to lose all the worst tracks off those first two albums. But it's like, so like the PR build for Millennium was just insane that they have all these insane bestsellers in Europe and all the teen girls just like chomping at the bit to finally be allowed to listen to that worldwide premiere Jackie Douglas was waiting for.
Like the album we know as Backstreet Boys is just picking the best hits that had already worked in a different market.
It's very confusing, but their first album, Backstreet Boys,
is actually two albums.
It came out in 1996 in Europe. Backstreet's Back.
Oh no.
The album, not the song, comes out in Europe in 1997.
Okay.
And then on the same day, a second album called Backstreet Boys. They have two separate albums called Backstreet Boys. The 96 one is worldwide. The 97 one is US only. And now, so Millennium is their first album that everyone gets at the same time. It's why the worldwide premiere is so, so momentous.
Mm. So I have to say real quick, like...
did I tell you guys this is also a true crime podcast about
damn it about
yeah, about crimes in the music industry. Earlier this season I broke the case that Kenny Rogers the Gambler has never been certified as a gold single.
I just want to say real quick, like, this entire time I like what you just said, I had no idea.
They do cover it in the documentary.
Aaron was nodding the entire time.
Yeah.
I was like, you just blew my mind. And Aaron was like, yeah, I know. Duh. This is basic stuff. So I just want to say, like, Aaron's the expert here.
I've been telling you to watch the documentary.
I mean, I did not watch the whole documentary, but if anything else, I'm glad you guys picked this just because I watched parts of the documentary.
Shut the fuck up and let me talk. You shut the fuck up. Listen, you said you want to hear. Shut the fuck up. You shut the fuck up. I swear to God.
You want to hear everybody.
Don't fucking talk to me that way.
I'll talk to you however I want to talk to you.
You don't get respect out of me that way.
Everybody around the table. Don't be a fucking dick.
Oh my God.
I remember that fight. I remember thinking, like, watching that and knowing Nick was like a hothead and that he, like, I would often think to myself, like, I can't believe they still work together when they fight like this. But I had no idea it was about that. Like,
yes, right? My sweet, sweet BBs just cursing at each other. I mean, it made me physically uncomfortable to hear that. And yet, I admit, I was enthralled. And I would listen to 2016 Backstreet Boys fighting for a lot longer.
Are we going to get into Lou Pearlman?
I'm going to cut 5 minutes later in the fight, and this is what randomly came up.
Your therapy, and I know you're living.
All right, I don't want to blow by the fact that Aaron brought up a very important name as long as we're going through minute details on the history of the Backstreet Boys, and she said the words Lou Pearlman. Did I hear that right?
I did. Well, when you played the true crime music, I was like, oh, are we going to get into Lou Pearlman? Because this could be a true crime podcast if we wanted it to be.
I'm glad you brought that up, Aaron, because it brings us to our surprise and most hated segment of the show.
Oh, no.
Cue it up, Evan. Ugh. The theme song that you hate. So, Aaron, Evan, Jack, I feel like Aaron is a shoo-in for this. I am going to Venmo you $5 if you can tell me one of the crimes that Lou Pearlman was convicted of.
Andrew springs this trivia segment on me every other episode.
We're 13 episodes in. Evan has gotten it twice.
I hate this.
He's gotten it twice.
All right, can we discuss as a team?
But then I'll only give you $250 each.
Okay.
That's fair.
That's the same because you're married.
Okay, so like he stole a bunch of money from the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. But he was also like weirdly into like children maybe and like could have been convicted on.
Oh, no. And while they're discussing, you know, for our audience, I'll just say that Lou Pearlman is their manager and they went on to found the NSYNC, but he got into it.
He auditioned the group. He put the group together. He was very much like a kingmaker.
He's a Svengali.
Yes, he's a Svengali. That's the correct term.
And he got into it because he owned a private plane company. Did you know this? And he noticed boy bands were flying around a lot and were therefore rich.
That's probably why they were able to record all their albums in Sweden.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I didn't know that.
I'm going to say transporting a minor across state lines.
Incorrect.
Dang it.
Okay.
Aaron, what's your final answer?
My final answer. Yeah.
You got this, honey. Come on. We need the $5.
Money laundering.
She got it.
She got it.
Money laundering. But guys, the crimes were so far beyond the scale of what I realized. I was like, oh yeah, Lou Pearlman like stole money from these bands, right? But he ran one of the largest Ponzi schemes in the history of the world. He stole more than $1 billion.
What?
What the fuck?
Approaching Madoff levels stealing.
That's over and above managing boy bands. Yes. That's a whole separate gig. He's got a whole separate gig.
But he like leveraged his ability to be like, I'm an important manager. Would you like to invest in my plane company? It's just all enormous Ponzi. The one thing that it was crazier than Madoff's is that it actually lasted longer.
Whoa.
It wasn't
just
as much
based
money.
On financial fraud. He's selling fake securities and moving the money around.
But that is the magic of the Backstreet Boys. They're like a duck in water that underneath the surface of the water, they're perpetrating one of the largest Ponzi schemes in the history of the world.
Right.
They're fighting about Brian Luttrell's vocal cord problems and Nick Carter's alcoholism. But above the water, what do you hear when the K92 DJ spins up I Want It That Way in 1999?
You hear magic is what you hear.
No wonder they had access to the private plane.
Yeah. Thank you for guiding the music video, Porsche.
Yeah, this is my only option. So pause as the lyric started. Yeah, I could only find the music video version, which starts with a shot of an airplane flying over him. That's the iconic guitar riff intro that you're describing, Jack. And that guitar part is so signature. It's so crispy. There's not a misplaced note. It's incredible. Yeah.
What I will say is that is why you fly to Sweden to get your record made, is so you can work with the just Swedish pop titans.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a real guitar. And what I'm trying to compliment here is that it is a very simple part. This is not somebody, you know, shredding the most difficult blues solo or whatever. It's a very simple part, but it's incredibly catchy. And that points to what Anders is about to talk about, which is Swedish pop. But the simplicity of this part is its secret power, but it's not the simplicity of just chummy chum chum on an open G chord of a beginner guitar. It's simplicity in precision.
Yeah, there's just such openness to it that falls away that like you were saying, Jack, you don't expect this from a boy band, like this openness, this kind of like soloness to it. You expect the harmonies, and all of a sudden there's so much air. And also there's kind of like a sea change in the lyric that for the rest of recorded time, after people hear this line, they're just going to sing the word fire differently. Fire is no longer fire. Desire is no longer desire.
Mm-hmm.
After Brian Luttrell walked across the tarmac and opened his beautiful mouth and showed us his beautiful teeth, mm-hmm. It's just always going to be fire,
yeah.
And desire.
You are my fire, the one desire, believe. When I say I want it that way.
Golly, oof.
To me, it's the reverb. I feel like there's more reverb in there than I remember hearing. So, like, I don't know. Maybe that just, like, adds to the legend of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, good ear. Yeah, there's a nice wet reverb on his voice that really sets it in the pop track. But I think for that era and for this genre, I think it's about what I expect is to wetten up the voice with a little reverb, makes it sound more polished. But, I mean, he's delivering a killer performance here. The diphthongs and the vowels. Fire and desire, like Andrew alluded to, he probably didn't know that he's changing the world.
No one ever does, right? No one ever does.
But we are two worlds.
Okay, the pass off from Brian to Nick.
Okay, so we heard Brian in the first verse. I'm just trying to get this all straight. That was Nick on the second verse, and each half closes on the refrain, I want it that away, and we don't yet know what the way is.
I would dither with you that that's one long verse split between Brian and Nick.
Okay.
But what is it? My question, what is it about Nick's voice that just lets you immediately know he's the bad boy of the group?
Ooh.
Wait, but also, I will never understand. I don't think he's that good of a singer, but yet we're all drawn to the voice. It's so nasally. It's a little like
very nasally. Yeah.
But also we're all like, do it again. Right.
Yeah.
I want to hear it
speak
again.
For yourself. I'm a Brian boy, you know, day in and day out, but that's a good question. Yeah. Why Nick? Nick is like kind of the face of the group, I'd say.
Yeah. He was the known heartthrob at the time. He's really
the known heartthrob.
It's because he had the perfect haircut.
Perfect haircut.
The perfect haircut with the part straight down the middle and the kind of fluffy adult bowl
cut.
Yeah.
He's a natural blonde. That also helped.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is it the nasality of his voice that makes it just like, ooh, this is the bad boy?
He really, that was like a, you know, very specific style that lasted for several years. Just singing like this.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Where are you? Yeah. Like that very nasally.
I think we can say that they're all great singers, but probably Brian and AJ are bringing more to the table in terms of like vocal pyrotechnics that they can just shoot off at any time.
The claim I hear you making, Evan, is that Nick was of a time, and as the time has moved on, perhaps he is not. Would you say that's what you're saying?
I'll say that his popularity at the time probably had to do with his ability to nail that very current style.
Yeah. Okay.
Aptly put.
Yeah, thank you. That didn't feel controversial. It feels like everyone was pausing as if I'm like really dropping some shade.
No, that's the right take, I think.
No, yeah, not at all.
Okay, so far we've just heard sensitive stanzas from Brian and Nick. Now we finally get the chorus drop. Tell me why it ain't nothing but a
mistake. Tell me why it ain't nothing but a mistake. Tell me why I never wanna hear you say
I want it that way. I can only imagine the amount of personality managing they had to do, like the producer had to do, to be like, Nick, Brian's gonna sing the first line, but you get to sing as much as him on the second half of the verse, and then you sing the lead on the chorus. So it's
but Nick, they're going Nick's to, already throwing chairs,
but
at
they're
this
going
point.
To Brian, yeah, and like, yeah. And they're like, Brian, Nick gets to hear, he gets to sing the chorus, but the first thing people are gonna hear is your voice singing, "You are my fire." It's going
to
be an iconic line. Honestly, I think Brian.
Be a fly on that wall.
I think Brian walked away the winner. But my main question for you, Aaron, as the true fan, dare I say the true stan of BSB, what does this chorus mean?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Oh, it means. It means hope that. There's only a 7-year age difference between me and Nick. And so while a 12-year-old and a 19-year-old dating might not be that cool, when I'm 20 and he's 27,
way
it'd
cooler.
Be totally fine. That's what it means.
Because the lyrics really don't make any
so
sense.
So he doesn't want to hear you say that you want it, because if he heard you say that, he might do it and that would be illegal. But he wants it. He just has to wait 7 years. Is that, am I getting that right?
You cracked the code. You just cracked the code.
Guys, this is not a podcast about KP.
Wow.
Everyone knows the lyrics. But let's just recap.
No,
the chorus is.
We did tell you that we're going to make our punch up based on this conversation, right?
We did
tell you that explicitly, right, Aaron?
I'm not getting arrested over this punch up. This is the chorus that we're talking about. Everybody knows the words, but I'm just going to recite them. Tell me why. Ain't nothing but a heartache. Tell me why. Ain't nothing but a mistake. Tell me why. Why? What one would think. I never want to hear you say, I want it that way. Now, at this point, we do not know what that way is referring to. That is the definite article specifying which way, that way.
Mm-hmm.
We don't
know. All we do know is that in the first verse.
Yeah.
They did say, like, believe when I say I want it that way. So it's okay if they say that they want it that way, but it's not okay.
I'm open to this.
Say you want it that way. Because
what have they said at that point, just a couple lines into the song? You're my fire, the one desire. So believe when I say I want it that way. If that's referring to just like, you're my one desire, I want it that way.
So far, so good. But then that damn chorus hits, and it's more confusing than Meatloaf's, you know, anything for love, but I won't do that. Like, it's a real mystery.
I'm so glad you brought
that
up.
So glad you brought that song. For me, there's a triumvirate of first ballot Hall of Famer confusing chorus songs where like the direct article is just going to drive people crazy for the rest of their known lives, and it's Meatloaf's I Would Do Anything for Love,
but I won't do that.
Hall & Oates, I Won't Go for That.
I Won't Go for That.
I Won't Go for That.
No.
And this, what is that? Are all three of that's the same? What is it?
Yes.
No,
yes, on this show, on Punch Up the Jam, we are, from now to the rest of time, putting those three songs in the same universe.
What?
That's canon now.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
The musical cinematic universe. MCU. Let's go.
I've long had a fan theory that Daryl Hall dared John Oates and Meat Loaf to have sex with each other, and that then they both went home and wrote their respective songs.
About doing that.
Yeah, I would do anything for love and I would do that and I won't go for that on the same night. But I don't know how I can fit the Backstreet Boys into that same cinematic universe that is
that's just tricky. I'm sure it can be done, but that's tricky.
Now, what I will say is the Backstreet Boys were long on record as just being like, well, like Max speaks really good English now, but that was 1999. His English was okay then. Like they just admitted it didn't make sense. But they have tried to backtrack in the last couple of years, and I found one.
What do you mean by backtrack? You mean now they claim it means something?
Now they claim it makes sense, and I find it to be a damning piece of evidence.
Yes.
And I'm going to read it to you right now.
Oh, okay. Hell yeah, Andrew.
A damning piece of evidence.
There it is.
And it all starts with, as most damning pieces of evidence you find on the internet, with a tweet from Chrissy Teigen.
Oh, that's fire.
Quote, I never want to hear you say, I want it that way, because I want it that way. He doesn't want to hear it because he's the one that wants it that way. He wants it to be the one to say it. Also, what is it? She's asking the same questions.
The same question that we are asking today, and the same question that billions of people have been asking for 20 years.
Now, who wrote this tweet in response? We don't know. Was it Kevin? Was it AJ? Was it Howie? Was it Brian, who is now a known QAnon?
But it's from the verified account of Backstreet Boys.
Backstreet Boys account. Yes. Don't want to hear you say that you want heartaches and mistakes, or to be two worlds apart. We don't want you to want, quote, it that way. That's the way we want it, for you to not want it that way. It makes no sense. I really had to read it four or five times to even understand what they were trying to say, but it just doesn't make any sense in context of the song.
No, not at all. Not at all. We learned nothing.
Yeah.
Except it's a Swede, you know, trying their best English. Like it doesn't make sense.
And a Swede also runs their social media account.
The only way that I can understand it after staring at these lyrics all day is that it's gotta be just about missionary sex.
Ooh,
it's gotta be.
Let's hear this.
I'm pulling up the lyrics right now.
It's gotta be about 19-year-old Nick Carter being like, "Hey, there's one way I want it, okay? Missionary. That's it. I always want to be on top in exactly the same way.
Oh my god!
But what he doesn't?
No experimentation.
You know what he doesn't want to hear her say? I want it that way.
What if
we switch? What if I was on top just for once? What if we tried it?
That's brilliant.
Whenever there's a song that's just euphemistically dancing around what it is, you got to assume it's sex stuff.
You got to assume it's sex. Sure. Yeah. Sure.
His girlfriend wanted to try sex on top once, and he just said no.
Mm-hmm.
Did not like not being the alpha, you know? I get it.
Yeah. And there's no way that you can both be on top. That breaks the laws of Euclidean geometry. Man. Okay, my adrenaline is actually up just talking about this. Let's see what comes next.
They turned it around.
Perfection. Ooh, finally. We got
AJ's
the dulcet
so
tones
good.
Of AJ.
I know, that's AJ.
He gets his own. So like the first, they split it up. AJ's like, nah, fuck that. Give me the second. I'm going to make it sweet and sultry. That's my middle name. And he nails it every time.
Took it home.
The question, am I your fire, is just so darn sexy, AJ.
Yeah, right? Flipping it back around.
He's like, he's daring her to say no. He's like, yeah, tell me that's not right. Tell me I'm not it. Yeah. He's daring her.
Now, the Backstreet Boys openly said that there were more lyrics for the second verse, and then they were just like, yeah, they weren't as good, so we just did the same ones again.
Yeah,
And this,
you know, if it ain't broke though, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It fucking worked. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Work and smarter,
it is shorter. AJ's getting the same amount of lyrics that Nick and Brian each got. And that's smart pop writing. You laid out the first verse was this long. Then when you go back to hear it again, you just make it half as long so you get to the hook quicker.
But that's a fair point. That's a very fair point. Yeah. Normally, and I guess like correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but like normally the second verse is typically what, the same length as the first verse? No,
the second verse same as the first.
You're writing rock songs, you know, that's situation normal, right? You're writing pop songs, you're trying to architect something so brilliant that it cannot be denied. You're in competition with the best songwriter in the world to win the top 40. And I have a pet theory about if you can get one line in the chorus of your song, that's certainly the case here, that is something that people just say in their normal life, then your song will always come to mind. And to just to say, I want it that way. And then you must think of this song and you're drawn inexorably back to it. I think about 2 years after, maybe 3 years after this song came out, Nelly had a worldwide smash hit with Hot in Here, and you'd hear it on the radio, but then you also couldn't escape it in your own psyche because it was summertime and you'd just be walking around going, golly, that's really hot in here. And then someone 12 feet away would go, I want to take my clothes off. Okay, let me play the next bit. Tell me why it ain't nothing but a fall. Tell me why it ain't Okay, now this second chorus, in my opinion, is much better because it has ad-libs from AJ instead of Nick. But Aaron, can you tell me who does the really high lick? I want it that way. Is that Brian doing the high bits?
That's all AJ, isn't it?
Let's run it back. I know AJ is doing the ad-libs.
Brian.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like Brian.
That's Brian.
Yeah.
That's 1,000% Brian. Yeah.
I got to say, I've made this reference before on our podcast, but for me, that's a major Inigo Montoya duel at the top of the Cliffs of Insanity. I am not left-handed moment. You know, you think you've seen everything that Brian has to offer a minute into their biggest hit, and all of a sudden he just throws his sword to his right hand, and he's like, Let me show you what I can really
parlor.
Do.
Ooh. Jesus Christ.
Elmium parlor.
We're finally arrived at the bridge in which Kevin is going to outline a little bit more vagueness around this relationship that is struggling.
Ooh, and this part's dark.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, it's sensitive.
Oh, yeah. This part is.
Good.
No matter the distance, I want you to know that deep down inside of me, you are.
I will say to you,
who's singing high with him? Was that AJ?
Okay, I think that one's AJ.
In like the newer versions of like when they do it live, like AJ is like way more. It's not so much. Yeah, it's not so much that it's like just an echo in the
background.
God,
we should see him live someday.
Let's go. We're going. Come to New York. Plan a trip to New York.
You know, I would never find myself at a show if you guys come to New York, I would love to see the Backstreet Boys.
We'll do a live episode.
Are you guys for real? Are you for real?
We'll record an episode in the crowd at Madison Square Garden in the hour before the show starts. It's gonna be the worst sounding podcast episode ever.
We will put it in the feed.
But the realist.
We're putting it as a feed post. I just want to say, Jack, to your earlier point, the reason that bridge just really tugs at the heartstrings. He says something about falling apart or whatever. But it's just that new minor chord at the top of the chorus that really just like hits right and puts you into like, oh, this is a sad part of the song. Mm-hmm. And then we come out into this like classic pop move that's also now I think of as being like the classic pop country move, which is you come out of the bridge, you come back into a verse or a chorus, but it's like everything is like ringing. It's like
all the instruments
you're kind of like
are gone.
Out of tempo.
Okay. I know what you're saying.
It's like a wash.
It's like, let me do this
vibe.
A cappella kind of. You know?
Yes. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll play this bit, but you're exactly right. Here it gets real tight and focused.
Drums are out.
Right.
Focus on these beautiful voices.
Stripped down.
Pure emotion.
Key change? Triumphant.
Taking us to glory.
Now, Nick. I know that Brian sings the first verse, and we are going to give the bridge to AJ, but you're going to sing the key change. We saved that for you, Nick.
Are you kidding? No, no, no. Nick wrote that. No, they didn't tell Nick that. Nick was like, I'll fucking sing this song if I do the key change.
Oh, so you're saying the song was actually over at 2 minutes.
Correct.
And all of a sudden,
correct. And then Nick was like, no, wait a minute.
Don't wanna hear you. I just took it up a whole step.
Right.
You guys just skipped right over Howie. This was only moment.
As we always do. Everyone does.
Do you know, and you might know this, Andrew, from watching the documentary, Howie was when the Backstreet Boys first came together, Howie was the main front guy. He was the original Brian or Nick.
Aaron, what happened to him? What happened to Howie?
They realized he wasn't tall enough.
No. Are you serious?
He wasn't tall enough. He wasn't blonde enough. I'm not sure.
Oh, man. Howie.
Oof. We've almost come to the end of our journey through the song. I think we learned a lot about it. What's left here? A double chorus? They're going to hit us with the repeat?
It's not just a double chorus. It's the key change that really, you know, sets the mood.
There's key changes in a lot of pop songs, but this one is a Hall of Famer. Don't want to hear you.
It's bold. It's really bold. It just puts its foot down and says, this is the right key now forever. Yeah. That's what it does.
Yes. Yes, exactly right. I'm just going to note they did a full step.
It is amazing. The key change is happening like basically a cappella. Like you aren't hearing the instruments, right? It's just like all of a sudden the voice is coming in. And I think that's what makes it so powerful is usually you'd hear like the instruments crowbarring it up. Mm-hmm. But instead you're hearing this voice that's in what is effectively the first time you hear the song, the wrong key. And then the band is like catching up with it.
That's true. Yeah, usually you would get one chord right before the downbeat that presents the new key to you, and then singer comes in. Well, I want to roll it back just to hear that little pivot one more time.
Yeah, all the guitars are still in that last key as he's singing against it, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Now there's unleashing the harmonies. Sixth grade Jack and Aaron are just like
in heaven.
Are just heaven. Vibing on different ends of the Susquehanna River.
Beautifully put. Wow.
I mean, who's doing the ad libs in this part, in between the lines?
Ooh, Aaron, do you know? I mean, that's Nick.
That was Nick.
Right, that's Nick, right?
That's Brian.
Belting it out.
That was the best part of this song.
It really is. AJ.
Really? Well, no, that they brought up Nick for that.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Well, this
That's
part's AJ.
Yeah.
No, AJ, Brian and Nick are going to split the first verse, but we're going to have a little coda at the end, a reprise, and we're giving it to you, AJ.
It's true. They really did have to sweet talk all five. They must have. Like, take them in separate rooms, be like, now. You know? And everyone, like, once they get to their part, they had to have been like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool. Like, what are you going to say to that?
There's some major politicking, obviously, around all these placements. Like, Brian has a nice prominent one at the top. AJ gets that really cool closer at the end. Nick has the awesome first ad lib on the first chorus. But we can all agree that Howie got the shaft. He got nothing.
Yes.
And you know what? It's Howie's fault because he agreed to it. He could have stepped up.
Victim blame?
I'm going to he could have stepped up and said like, now, wait a minute, fellas. Like
everything about him, like his puppy dog little face to me just says people pleaser. You know, Nick and Brian are screaming curse words at each other and he is people sitting pleaser. Calmly in the corner. Well, he's filled with stress hormones in the corner just thinking, mom and dad, don't fight.
Oh, Jesus. Man. It's brutal. We have a lot to work with here. We have, you know, our punch up. First of all, it has to be better than this song. So yeah. that's number one.
Good luck.
We opened the show establishing that this is basically a perfect song. And yet the history of this podcast has proved that no song is unpunchable.
It is a fool's errand. We have the Susquehanna River, Chesapeake Bay connection. We have your guys' love of their concerts, the April Fool's idea. Are the two kind of separate sex ideas?
The elephant in the room is the question that everyone poses. Yeah. What is that way?
Is it Nick Carter's desire for Aaron? Is it Aaron's desire for Nick Carter? Does Nick Carter only want to have missionary sex? How can we keep those two ideas from touching each other? Keep those siloed.
Unintended.
Separate. We have a lot to work on. Usually we take 2 to 4 weeks to work on one of these, but I think we could be in the lab for years with it.
well, page us. Give us a page when you figure it out, boy.
Punch it. Punch it!
All right, we're back in, and we've talked about every possible angle of this song. We've dissected it north and south, and Andrew and I explored so many different ways to go about this, but we were beating our heads against the wall because there's really only one thing that must happen in the punch-up.
Sure. Lou Pearlman must go to jail.
No. He died.
We covered this already. And he died in prison.
No, don't worry. We didn't make the punch up about Lou Pearlman's crimes. I wanted to make it about Lou Pearlman's crimes, but it wasn't the right thing to do.
No. But there is one question that must be answered. It's the eternal question of what way.
And there's a cover-up here. There's the cover-up that Backstreet Boys is changing their tune. Backstreet Boys out there responding to Chrissy Teigen on Twitter, claiming that they know what way they're even talking about. They don't.
They don't even know what way. Yeah.
They don't. They don't know.
No way.
No. Are you guys nervous right now to unveil what you've created?
I am nervous. I'm nervous every week, but I respect you guys. I admire you guys, and I'm afraid that we're going to be judged more poorly as people for what we're about to play.
I'm not nervous. I'm so flippin' excited about this.
Yes, that's the right reaction.
No, I understand. I'm like, I would be nervous because sure as shit, I'm going to judge you for this.
You guys have been to 5 Backstreet Boys concerts unless you went to one in the last 2 weeks.
We have news.
Yeah. Okay, here it is.
Right.
I want it that way. Punched.
No.
Love the reverb.
Thank you.
You are my fire, the one desire, believe when I say
okay.
I want missionary. I feel honestly attacked when you tell me to lay on my back. And you say, quote, I hate missionary. Tell me why you always gotta be on top. Tell me why you sneak in a position strong. Tell me why I never wanna hear you say, quote, missionary is the peasant's way.
Am I too gorgeous to watch when I bust? Yes, I know.
Oh, no.
It's too late, 'cause I went so quickly. Tell me why you don't try to teach me news.
Tell me why.
Like what to do or how to move my junk. Tell me why. See that you're trying to read Dr. Ruth and the Kama Sutra. Forget 69 and the other ones too. There is only position 52.
one mission, my one possession. On top.
On top.
On top. On top.
Every single one of them could appreciate it, except for Brian, but right. Whatever. I feel like we need to maybe send this song to them.
That was beautiful.
It really was. It has a much more clear direction.
Yes.
Than Thank the original, you. At least.
There's a purpose now.
Yeah.
And gosh darn it, perhaps I'm being too explicit, but I agree. You know, keep it classy, keep it simple. Don't try new things. I hate, absolutely, love all the lyrics.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. We're going back to the lyrics. We're reading them.
I never want to hear you say I'm into foot play. Yeah, that is.
I also was I'm really into the quick lay and the ending of the song with it. You're my all time worst lay. Oh, that's love that. I love that.
The song makes freaking sense now.
We should send this to Chrissy Teigen and be like,
just respond to that Twitter reply from 3 years ago to the Backstreet Boys with just this, just a link, a Dropbox link to this song. Just be like, makes you think.
She'd be like, what are you talking about? I don't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, let alone what I twatted 3 years ago.
Oh my gosh. Ooh. Okay, so did you guys already, when we talked to you last time, did you already know where you were going with this?
No.
Absolutely not.
No, no. I mean, okay. Of course you want to ask the question, what is that way?
Once it clicked with me that I wanted that way could rhyme with missionary.
Uh-huh.
Then the rest just does itself, you know?
Brilliant. Just brilliant. Honey, what do you think? Is this fixed? Is this the superior version?
I mean, it has a clear direction. I think we know exactly what that way is. And I would argue that with the exception, I would think that a majority of the Backstreet Boys would agree that missionary is the way. So I think this song might be punched up and fixed.
Yeah, maybe now, Jack, it seems like you've come around to having even had your sexual attitudes changed by this song, that now you would agree that missionary is the best position.
I'm sticking with, what was it, 52?
52? I believe it.
I have a question about 52, because that's a change you made at the last minute. Is 52, is that a numbered, is that like a Kama Sutra number, or if I was to visualize missionary position in my mind, does it look like the number 52, like a 69 position looks like a number 69?
Well, let's picture a digital clock.
I feel like missionary looks like the number 4.
I'm with Aaron. I was about to say it looks like the number 4 because the legs are kind of like one leg,
right,
if you're looking at it from the side.
Oh, I'm literally drawing the 5 and the 2 as they would appear on a digital clock, like, you know, like a child. Okay.
Yeah, I was picturing a digital clock in which the 5 and the 2 are exactly symmetrical facing each other, like a reflection of each other.
Oh, wait, so there was actually a purpose to the 52?
The same way that 69 is an illustration of the way the numbers face
Genius.
Each other. That's the reason.
I thought it was just like a made up number. I didn't even think about it.
Well, my dumb, naive ass was like, oh, is page 52 missionary in the Kama Sutra? Yeah. Like, and not thinking about the shape of the number.
That's where I was. Like Dr. Ruth's 100 sex positions.
Yeah. So we subscribe to your Patreon, and that's how we get access to the song unlimited.
No, the only payment for doing this podcast is we are going to email you an MP3.
I think you guys did a wonderful job.
You guys delivered.
You surpassed all expectations.
And we will be burning the MP3 onto a CD when we go to a Backstreet Boys concert together.
Oh!
we'll take that CD and just throw it up on the stage, the four of us.
So
the Backstreet Boys can't wait. Hear
honestly,
this version.
Also, I used to work with a girl who knew AJ through a friend of a friend. I'm like, we've got connections. Like, we can find
them. Use them. Yeah.
We'll get them this CD.
We will get them. We will find them. We will get them this song.
That's the best endorsement of the punch-up yet, really, that you're this insistent that the Backstreet Boys need to hear it.
Every punch-up we do, I pray that it makes it back to the original artist, but this one most of all.
At the end of our podcast every week, we have a little segment that we like to call Walkin' Music.
What is your walkin' in music?
And walkin' music, well, we talk about what song you would want to play when you walk into just an iconic event in your life. It could be while you're walking down the aisle at your own wedding. It could be while you're smashing someone over the head with a folding chair in a WWE match.
Like you do.
Like you do. Or it could be while you're walking into your own court case. And I think Evan and I are going to lead off this week. We're going to do a couples.
We got four individuals here this week, so we're going to do couples walk-in music.
Couples walk-in music.
Andrew and I picked one item together. The reason I pushed for this song is because I strongly associate it with the same summer that I Want It That Way came out. And this is a song that was a big hit around the same time. At least I remember it that way, playing on the radio at the same time. But it did not stand the test of time. It stinks. And yet, it is permanently entwined in my mind with I Want It That Way.
So what are you walking into it?
Here's my scenario. I was badly injured in a forklift accident, and I'm in a coma for 8 years. Okay. And
so you're waking up in... Does the coma start in 1991 and you're waking up in 1999? Or the coma starts in 1999?
Coma starts in 19... It's got to start in 1999, and I'll wake up in 2007. But it's not one of those comas where it feels like it was 1 second. Like, I know I've been out for a while, and like things may be different. I may have lost everything. I look up, and I gasp, and there by my bedside is my patient wife, and I hit play on the boombox.
She likes me for me. Yes! I hang with Leonardo, or that guy who played in Fargo. I think his name is Steve.
She likes me for me.
And I just can't live without her.
Wow. She loves you so much that in the 8 years you've been in a coma, she actually went to medical school and became your doctor. She's standing there with your chart in her lab coat.
She stayed with me because she likes me for me.
Not that guy who played in Fargo.
I'm so happy for you, honestly.
That song.
You came out of a coma and you still have a wife that's so faithful.
It's beautiful is what it is.
It's a miracle.
She's so faithful. She went to med school and invented the cure.
I don't know if you've ever even heard this song, or maybe you've heard this song before. The song is called Hey Leonardo. Most people know it as She Likes Me for Me. And it's by a band called Blessed Union of Souls is the name of the band. And for some reason, I think they spelled Blessed B-L-I-S-S-I-D or something.
Oh, terrible choice.
I'm probably missing.
That's why they're a one-hit wonder.
But it's probably that band name that put that scenario in your mind, the Blessed Union of Soul, between your comatose soul and the soul of your beautiful doctor wife.
Oh, I haven't thought about that song in a long time.
Throwback walk-in song for a throwback episode. Now hit us with your story. What do you guys bring into the pod?
For those who are familiar with the Detective Columbo, you know,
Are you doing walk-in music for a TV show that exists?
I am, you know, and it's not even for us, right? Okay. It's actually for, as we discussed often in this episode, Howie. Howie Duroux is being grilled and interrogated by the hard-boiled, purposefully misleadingly bumbling detective, Columbo. And Columbo is like asking him all these questions like, now, where were you on the night of, I got written here, it was a Saturday, and you were telling me it's a Friday. And how he's got all these like smooth lined, like, well, detective, yes, perhaps I did say Friday, but it was a Saturday. And here's what, blah, blah, blah. And Columbo's like, oh, of course. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. No, my apologies. That's my fault. Sure, sure. So the song hits shortly after Columbo is about to leave, you know, and Howie thinks I've evaded questioning by this bumbling detective. I committed the murder or the crime successfully, blah, blah, blah.
But it's probably but murdering then, Brian and AJ.
I think that's right. Yeah. Howie has murdered both of them. And he's smugly smiling to himself. Maybe he's even smiling IRL. We don't know. And so Columbo is turning towards the front door. You know, he's like, I'll just see myself out, you know. And then at the last second, he whips around and says, you know, just one more thing. And I'm so sorry. I'm going to get out of your hair real quick. I don't mean to bother you or nothing. But and he asks this key question that only Howie knows. And once Columbo asks this question, Howie knows that he has just been outed as the not only the primary suspect, but the murderer, the true murderer. So Howie knows that his time is up. And this is the song that plays in Howie's head once he knows that his time is up.
As he's getting handcuffed.
Oh, man.
Just the darkest graduation from a life really of is. A life of it pop really stardom is. To a life of crime and just jail
poor
time.
Howie.
I get it.
A
it's a song of memory. It's introspection. He's thinking about his life as we go on from each other. But also, he's graduating to jail.
You could go back and grab a lot of like stock Backstreet Boys footage from the 90s of him hanging out with
me,
Brian
man.
And AJ and just put it in black and white. You know, they used
obviously
like,
black and white with a big old vignette around the corners. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
25 years ago, they were on stage together. Now he murdered Brian and AJ.
Hey, yeah, make that movie, Hollywood. All right, just saying.
This is a great movie pitch. This is a great walk-in song. You know, a lot of people might want to choose this track as their walk-in song. And they would have phoned it in and come on this show and said, I'm walking into my graduation.
Nope, no, that's not
that.
What Jack and Aaron did.
You wove a tale as a bald-faced excuse to get your half-assed Columbo impression on my show.
That's all I did it for. I think you're 100% correct. For all three of your listeners that are like, oh, yeah, I know Columbo.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That is, I was drinking it in.
It's a walk-in song for the ages. It's absolutely going to blow up the Spotify playlist of walk-in songs that you can find. People are going to be desperate for us to take it off, but we're going to refuse, and you're going to shuffle right into it.
Stand your ground. Yes. Put your foot down.
A reminder to all of our listeners, not just this week's punch-up, but all of our punch-ups are on our Patreon page at patreon.com/GregoryBrothers.
You can follow all of us. I'm at GetSomeEvan.
I'm A. Rose Gregory.
Jax Films on Twitter and YouTube and Twitch.
And I'm at 2 toes up.
Jack and Aaron, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I learned a lot about the Backstreet Boys, and I'm really, really looking forward to going to the Madison Square Garden show together.
Oh, I am psyched.
That makes
also,
two of us.
You are a straight up scholar. Honestly, I'm so impressed.
Yeah, honestly, this was a treat.
So amazing.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's just really fun to discuss music and music theory and lyricism and just everything with you guys. This was so much fun.
We got to wrap this up. We got to quit talking about the Backstreet Boys and how Howie's ego is just still totally shattered that when he went to their manager and said, please, let me sing the first line of I Want It That Way, just tonight only Lou Pearlman looked at him and said,
ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis.
Damn.
I don't even know his name.
Right, that's the worst disrespect.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam, punch it up.
But after I watched the documentary, I actually got Kevin Richardson's phone number from our agent, and I called him up.
Are you lying?
Yeah, you're lying.
He's setting up a bit. Just go with it.
I called him up, and I just said, "Hey, Kevin,
we will watch your career with great interest."
Oh my god! Did we just get Star Wars? What was that?
Yes, that's Senator Palpatine telling young Anakin Skywalker.
Oh, yeah. Wow! Thank you for that.
That was a HeadGum original.